This is the Watts Podcast, episode number 63, part 2, Off-Grid Living.
Power.
Bill Kemp, who has written books about biodiesel, off-grid living, and energy efficiency, joins us on the show once again. He's on the line from his off-grid home, which is close to Ottawa, Ontario. What is powering your home?
Well, that's a good point. It's going to be different for every location, but the main choices that you have for renewable energy powered homes are photovoltaic panels. Those are the ones that convert sunlight into electricity. You can have wind turbines for the home as well. You can have micro hydro systems if you've got sufficient water resources on your property. And you can also have a, and this one surprises a lot of people, is a diesel generator that is powered with biodiesel as your renewable energy supply to the house. So those are the primary four electrical inputs that that you can use for powering the home. And then on top of that, because our house needs thermal energy for hot water, and also we have a jacuzzi out on the deck, we have a solar thermal system that provides the thermal energy for the domestic hot water as well as the as well as heating the jacuzzi. And now we don't have all of those, by the way. I should have on the electrical side. Yeah. We have in our house, we have photovoltaics, we have a wind turbine, and we have the biodiesel generator as our input sources.
Okay. And do you have batteries as well storing electricity?
Yep. Because the sun generally goes down at night and you generally want your lights on at night, you need some way of storing the energy that you produced in the daytime and need to store it for periods of time when there is no wind or sun. And so every off-grid electrical home will have some form of battery storage. There are different kinds of batteries, but without a doubt, the most common and the most economically efficient batteries are the deep cycle lead acid batteries. Mm-hmm. And people get a little excited about them, saying, "Oh, gee, they're not as friendly, and there's new technologies, and there's super caps, and there's all of these things." The problem is, there really isn't. The only thing that's out there that works is batteries. You may be able to get NiCad batteries or gelled cells as alternatives, but 95% of all the applications, it's deep cycle lead acid batteries. And the good news is that they get recycled at the end of their life. So it's not like these things are going to landfills. So you have to store the electricity.
And there are some issues with batteries as well. I mean, do you keep them inside the house or are they outside in a shed? Because I think that there's some gases that are coming off of those lead acid batteries, aren't there?
That's correct. The lead acid batteries do give off hydrogen gas, and during the electrolysis process of charging, the final stages of charging. And ours are inside the house. There's nothing dangerous about it. It's just a matter of they need to be in a sealed cabinet or a sealed room, and they have to have a vent that goes outside. It's best to keep the batteries indoors in Canadian climate. If you're in warmer climates in the southern part of the states, no problem leaving them outdoors. The issue is that anybody who's ever tried to start a car with a weak battery in the wintertime recognizes that the colder the battery, the less available energy that is in it due to temperature. So it's nice to keep the batteries at room temperature in a cool, dry location that's also clean. So, by all means, they can go outside in an insulated shed if that's what you want, but there's no harm in putting them indoors as long as the building is properly and the room is properly ventilated and so on. And we have a section in the book that discusses all of that.
Okay.
So maybe I should take you for a little tour quickly as to how the flow of the system works, and then you can kind of poke through it from there. So so what happens is that photovoltaic panels are probably the primary source of electrical input for most off-grid homes. The beauty of them is that once you've got a south-facing location, or in our case we have such a wide open area that we can have a mechanical tracker that literally tracks the solar panels from east to west during the day to follow the sun. The electricity is produced and in direct current form, and therefore can go directly into the battery. We have a device called a maximum power point tracker, which is just a fancy word for an electronic voltage control that that make sure that the photocells are working at their maximum efficiency for charging the batteries, and to ensure that the batteries are becoming, you know, properly charged and not overcharged or undercharged. The power from the wind turbine that we have a fairly large one. It's a 1.5 kilowatt rated Berge unit, which sits on a 33-meter or 100-foot tall tower.
Okay.
And it produces three-phase alternating current, which is not compatible with batteries, so the power from it has to go through a rectifier, which converts it from alternating current to direct current, and it too goes through a controller and then into the charging of the batteries. And the power then is accumulated in the batteries. When the batteries are full, any excess power that is produced is dumped into the through another controller into the into an electric hot water heating tank, which simply preheats the cold water coming in from the well. So we're trying to capture all of the available energy that we've got here to improve the efficiency. From the batteries, you can store the electricity at different voltages. 12, 24, or 48 volts are the most common voltage ranges. You can, but it's pretty tough to run a home on direct current. I mean, it's possible to do it, and maybe for small hunting cabins or occasional use cottages, you might want to do that just for the simple reason of not having to pay for an inverter, which converts the direct current to regular household 120 volt AC. But, you know, in a full-time residence, you wouldn't want to do that, because the problem is the selection of appliances is very poor. The price for these 12-volt appliances tends to be much higher, and the quality tends to be much lower, as is the energy efficiency. So, so in most homes, you take the power from the battery and put it into a device called an inverter, which converts it, as I mentioned, back to regular household power.
What type of efficiency loss is there associated with the inverter?
Negligible.
Okay.
People get fixated on that. I mean, there are you know, they're not 100% efficient for sure. There's a few percent depending on load. But the problem is that what people never ask on the other half of the question is, if you didn't have the inverter, what are the efficiency losses by using 12-volt appliances? And what you'll find is that that 12-volt appliances tend to be considerably less efficient than the equivalent appliances operating at 120 volts. So I always say to people, just ignore that any efficiency drop across the inverter. And you'll find from one inverter to the next that, you know, yes, there might be a couple of percent difference in conversion efficiency curves between one and the other, but really that you know, that is a moot point. It it becomes lost in the background noise, you know, when you're operating your home day to day. For us, you know, it's something I've measured it, you know, the first couple of times just to see what it was. But in reality, it makes no effect on the quality of your lifestyle, so you don't see it.
And what wiring must be a pretty tricky part of integrating a wind power system and photovoltaics as well, right?
Not really. The house side of the home is wired perfectly normal. In fact, I encourage everyone to have the house wired by a certified electrician and have it inspected by your electrical safety authority having jurisdiction. And the reason is very simple. One is that from an insurance standpoint, it's not going to confuse your insurance agents, and that it's just a normal home that has a normal wiring certificate. And two, if you ever decide to sell your home, or if the wires ever happen to be extended from the hydroelectrical company, utility company, you may want to connect on, or if you sell the home, the next owners may not be quite as excited about off-grid living as you are, and this will, you know, potentially could eliminate a future handicap in terms of selling the home. So from that standpoint, up to the power panel, to the, you know, circuit breaker panel in the house, everything's identical. Now, where it gets different is from the photovoltaic panel or wind turbines into the battery bank and inverter. And that is different, there's no question. It requires a different kind of wiring than most electricians are used to. And there are requirements for that. And both the Canadian Electrical Code and the National Electrical Code in the United States have specific wiring requirements for wiring those systems in. But aside from the fact that the wire is bigger and heavier because you're working with lower voltages, it's really not that much more difficult for somebody who's used to working with you know, with the industrial wiring or house wiring to follow through.
Interesting. So before I asked about inverters, I guess I cut you off. You were talking about your system. I mean, you had solar, winds, batteries.
Yes, that's right, and a biodiesel power generator. Mm-hmm. Well, the power inputs become important to understand, and a lot of people, you know, make comments. I hear this one all the time. Oh, we live on a hill, we live by the water, and we got lots of wind, and so we want to run our home on wind. Well, it doesn't work that way. What you have to do, of course, is find out how much energy that you're going to use on a daily basis. Then we have to find out how we're going to produce that energy. And we have to look at the total energy production over the course of a year. Now, it's very easy in any location in North America or the world, for that matter, to look at a solar insolation chart, which will tell us pretty much exactly how much light or sunlight that you will get in hours per day during all phases of the year, for example, in the darker winter as well as in the brighter summer. And from that, we can calculate how much energy we can produce from the photovoltaic panels, and then that will give us an idea of what percentage of the total electricity we produce from that particular source. Now, an interesting thing from where I live in Ontario, Canada, the summertime, we have an enormous amount of sunlight. You know, right now the sun's getting up at about 5:30 or so, and by 6:15, 6:30 in the morning, it's hitting our photovoltaic panels, and because of the tracker, is staying with the panel right through till say 8 o'clock at night or so. So we're getting an enormous amount of sunlight. But in the months of November, you can actually have 2 or 3 weeks where you won't see any sun or very spotty. So the problem is. Do you calculate how much energy you're producing in the winter or in the summer? And the tendency would be to say, well, obviously we've got to live in the winter time too, so we'll just put more panels in to compensate. And what you'll quickly find out is, if you do that, is that you'll need a bank account like Bill Gates to make that happen. So most people don't do that. What they do is they look at how much power they can produce from one source. And then they start to lay in multiple sources, such as the wind turbine and the generator. And we call these hybrid systems, because what we're going to find is that in the summertime here in Ontario, there's virtually no wind where we live in the summertime. It, you know, it blows a little bit, but certainly not enough to produce any power. And we can go to modeling software on the net. For example, www.windatlas.ca is a Canadian map, and there are equivalent ones in the U.S., and you can punch in your longitude and latitude, and the system will give you a pretty good idea of how much wind you get in your area based on computer models. It's not 100% accurate, because wind is not quite as democratic as sunlight, but it'll give you a pretty good estimate, and then you can lay on some estimates on top of your photovoltaic power production with your wind. And what you'll find typically happens, as it does here, is that in the winter and spring, the amount of wind that you get is higher than it is in the summer, which perfectly complements the photovoltaics, which are exactly the opposite. So that tends to fill in some of the blanks over the course of the year. But inevitably, what you're going to find is you can't make 100% of your power with the wind and photovoltaics without spending an inordinate amount of money.
Yeah.
So most people then will provide some form of backup power, and oftentimes what they'll do is they'll put either gasoline or natural gas or propane or a diesel generator in place and use that to bump up the difference. So that's exactly what we've done in our home, except that we've used biodiesel to reduce the footprint, carbon footprint, as much as we can. And so we find in our location that we get 80% of our yearly energy from photovoltaic panels, 15% from the wind turbine, and about 5% from the backup generator. So you can play an awful lot of these games, and it becomes extremely important to understand all of this. That's why I encourage everyone to, you know, get as much education as you possibly can. And that's one of the reasons why the Renewable Energy Handbook is so big. I mean, it's a 600-page, monster. And but at the same time, make sure that you get hooked up with a dealer that has a good amount of experience with this in your area, so that you can work through all of these sizing and siting issues to make that.
Sizing is I can imagine really important. Have you ever heard of a program called HOMER? It's published by the National Renewable Energy Labs in the U.S. and it's the perfect program for somebody like you and people wanting to live off grid. It's free. You can download it for free. And basically, what you do, it's an optimization software. So you say, this is my load. So this is how much energy my home uses. This is I want to power it with a wind turbine, a diesel generator, and I have batteries backups. And what it will do is it will calculate for you and optimize exactly the size of the batteries that you should be using, the size of the wind turbine that you should be using, so that it gives you the most cost-effective solution. It is a really excellent program, actually.
Yeah, I think these sorts of tools, I mean, they're springing up all over the place. We have similar ones that are produced here in Canada by Natural Resources Canada, and they're all very, very useful. And I think the more that you can do these numbers and run the calculations yourself and with the aid of software and so on, the more that it will help you ensure that the data that you're putting together is accurate, and that the system that you get ultimately at the end of the day will meet your lifestyle goals.
Yeah.
Because one of the worst things that can happen is that people go into this with an unrealistic set of expectations, and it's like a bank account. You know, you if you take more money out of your bank account than you put in, something's going to break down sooner or later, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of the withdrawals. And a renewable energy system is exactly the same. If you continue to consume more energy than you produce because you incorrectly sized the system or you got an unscrupulous dealer who undersold you equipment or gave you poor quality equipment, your power system is going to be shutting down. It's going to be inadequate, and you're going to be disgruntled and disappointed with it. And I see it all the time where people have sold systems because they were unhappy with the system or that it didn't do what they said it would do, and yet. There's absolutely no need for that. We've got a system here that is completely transparent. The system can turn on and off the generator if it needs power because we've had exceptional cloudy days or mm-hmm. what have you. It turns out that a properly designed system is a treat to live with, and there's no reason for you to live a Spartan lifestyle either.
So, 14 years of living off-grid, have you had to replace anything?
Let me think about that for a second. The tracker that moves the panels has a little control module, and it has been knocked out twice now because of lightning storms. It's not as well designed as I would like to have seen it, and I've actually spoken with the company about it. In fact, I've actually offered to re-engineer it for them. But they have not done that. But at the same time, I'll give them credit that they've been very good about replacing the controller under warranty and mailing out a new one quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a critical piece. The good news is that everything still continues to run. You just have to manually move the tracker back to the south facing position and just leave it there until the spare one comes in. There's a number of people that live off the grid within about an hour's drive of where we are, and we've made a little arrangement with a few of them where we've purchased spare components, and just kept them as a little community pot so that if anything goes down, we've got them. And as it's turned out, we've never used any of our parts. So it's been quite good. Now, having said that, it is a power station, and you have responsibilities to maintain it. So there are things you have to do. The batteries are probably the weakest link, where most people completely, tend to forget about them. They sit in the dark little locked cabinet in the basement, and nobody looks at them, and everyone thinks, well, as long as the lights are on, everything's working.
Mm-hmm.
So the batteries do require that you need to keep them clean. The outgassing may cause bubbling and buildup of salts and whatnot on the top, so we want to make sure that's all cleaned off. We've got to fill them generally a couple of times a year with distilled water to top them up. You have to check the specific gravity with a little bulb that draws a little of the fluid out, and we want to check those occasionally, and I put that word in quotes, because it, what tends to happen is beginners get into these systems, they don't pay attention to the battery, and they don't understand the relationship between the specific gravity of the battery acid or electrolyte that's inside of it and the amount of energy that's in it. And so they tend to be always over drawing power from the battery. So I recommend that for the first month or so that people are, you know, are living in an off-grid home, that they measure the specific gravity at least weekly and possibly even daily for a while, and preferably to also have a meter, a battery meter, that electronically is monitoring the amount of power and watching that you understand how the two are synchronized together, so that you can understand what the energy consumption is like, and that your batteries are being properly maintained. Mm-hmm. So that's, and then once you understand that, then you read your battery meter electronically, it becomes a, you know, almost a non-issue. I read the specific gravity now on our batteries twice a year, and just mark it down on the chart. So it doesn't take a lot of time. Photovoltaic panels, not much there. They come with very long warranties, usually 25 to 30 years. So the warranty is, if the warranty is 25 years, the lifetime is obviously considerably longer. So there's very little to do with them other than just clean them if they become dirty for any particular reason. And usually the rain will take care of them. Wind turbines, well, they're mechanical, and that depends an awful lot on the quality of the unit. I know of many people who have had wind turbines that have watched them disintegrate, you know, on a relatively frequent basis. I have one person that I've, you know, has been in touch with me over the last sort of 4 years and has been through three of these little, I'm going to call them toy wind turbines more than anything. I've got a Berge, which I consider one of the best. I paid more for it for sure, but it's been up there an awfully long time, and the maintenance manual is pretty explicit. It says once a year on a windy day, go outside, look up, and if it's still spinning, then you've done your maintenance for the year. And while I do take that a little bit with a grain of salt, I have gone up and just checked the slip rings and whatnot, and everything has been very good on that on that unit. So that's pretty much all there is from the maintenance standpoint, and just being aware.
Okay, my last question, how do you do things like phones and internet? I mean, I know you were talking to me once about how you're testing all kinds of different voice over IP systems for phones.
That's right. Well, generally speaking, if the hydro wires don't come to you, then neither do the telephone lines. And so there are some concerns there. Now, we were quite lucky. In our case, the telephone lines were just strung down the road for whatever particular reason to go across the lake. And so we were able to get wireline communication here. But having said that, we don't have access to any high-quality ISDN lines or for internet. So what we've done is we've gone to a satellite system. We use the explornet.com, explornet.com satellite for high-speed internet communications, and we could, if we wanted to, use voice over IP on that system. So that's certainly one way of getting both internet and voice line at the same time. Depending on how close you are to some municipal areas, there are different types of line of sight microwave internet systems that are available. In Ontario here, the storm.ca is an example where if you're within about 12 kilometers of a municipal water tower, which tends to be where they put these, you can get high-speed internet and, of course, voice over IP on it. Cell phone is, of course, another option. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if your bank account is fairly deep and you're way in northern Alaska or something, you can always go to a satellite phone if you really have to. So there are options just depending upon where you are.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show once again, Bill.
Oh, my pleasure again.
All the listeners out there, don't forget to check out Bill's book, The Renewable Energy Handbook, and of course his new book, Biodiesel Basics and Beyond. And the publisher's website is aztext.com.
Right? That's correct.
Okay.
Power off.